This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Saturday, the first Saturday in January. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program A.J. Haefeli. A.J. is the Avalanche beat writer for BSNDenver.com. A.J., good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, A.J. A victory for the Avalanche last night against the New York Rangers, a much-needed victory, as the Avs had been struggling before that. 3-5-2 in their last 10 games, the Avalanche are. They've fallen into a wild-card spot in the Western Conference. From your perspective, why have the Avs been struggling over the last 10 or so games?
You kind of just throw a dart at the dartboard of bad, and every night they came up with something different. You know, one night the defense doesn't play well, and the goaltending falls apart, and then the offense can't score another night. And, you know, it was just kind of a rotating cast of follies, to be honest with you. And last night they were able to put it all together, and they played a complete game, and they actually looked like an NHL team again. And, you know, It was a nice change of pace for them, because pretty much the entire month of December they looked like a team that was stuck in quicksand. You know, they wanted to get out of it, and they were trying to get out of it, and it just seemed like they were just totally in over their heads the harder they tried.
You know, AJ, you mentioned goaltending in your answer, and it seems like our entire show today has been about goaltending, but that's hockey, right? I have to be honest with you. When I saw this goalie coming into the lineup for the Avalanche, I had no idea who he was. So I guess I'm going to ask you the question, who is Pavel Francouz? And is it possible that he has more of a long-term role than maybe people originally thought with this lineup? Because he actually has looked good in relief of Philip Grubauer.
Yeah, Francouz is a guy that they brought in from the KHL last year, where he was goaltender of the year. He's 28, and he's a bit undersized, and that's probably the reason it's taken as long as it has for him to get a shot. But he's been very good for the Eagles in the AHL. He made the AHL All-Star game, and then they've given him a couple of relief appearances in games they were getting blown out in, and he played well, and they came back in those games, and he has two hard luck losses because life is hard. So he's a guy that they probably would like to have be their backup starting next year. I imagine Semyon Varlamov probably finds employment elsewhere this summer, and Grubauer is kind of their starter of the future, the guy that they want to, you know, hand that job to. They've been desperately waiting for him to take the job. He hasn't quite done that yet, and Francouz is a guy that they really like. And they're really hoping that he can step in and kind of win the backup job for next year.
AJ, in 2016, the Avalanche hosted the Red Wings in the Stadium Series at Coors Field. We know in 2020 they're going to be at Falcon Stadium at the Air Force Academy. First of all, what do you think of that selection of a venue, and who do you think will be a good choice for the Avalanche to face in that game?
I was at the Coors Field one, and there was not a better venue, better experience imaginable for the people of Colorado. It's kind of the crown jewel of Colorado sports. Going down to the AFA down there to the Academy, it's a gorgeous venue. It's in the shadow of Pikes Peak. It's a legendary stuff down there in the Springs. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know we're all really looking forward to another outdoor, the whole experience. You know, the NHL comes to the city, and they put on a big show, and it's a whole weekend worth of festivities. I think we're going to get the Kings as the opponent. That sounds like who's been getting lined up, and given some of the monetary investments that Kings ownership has, down in Colorado Springs, it makes sense, given that the Avalanche would like to win that game. It also makes sense that the Kings are there. I'm looking forward to that, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's not official, but we're pretty sure that it's going to be the Los Angeles Kings, and we're going to get some college games down there as well.
AJ Haefeli is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. AJ is the Avalanche beat writer for BSNDenver.com. The Avs are going to be visiting the Jets next week for a Central Division tilt. AJ, we know how great Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog have been this season for the Avalanche. I mean, certainly the drivers of the team. Is it, I mean, for the Avalanche to have any real success come playoff time, do they need to get more from a secondary, more of a secondary scoring from the other players on that team, guys like JT Compher, a guy like Alexander Kerfoot? Do they need more than just what the top line has been providing, which is, I mean, an incredible season thus far?
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine come playoff time that one line is going to win you a playoff series, and it certainly won't win you two. So I don't think that those guys, as great as they've been, those guys certainly aren't going to be enough, once you get into the postseason. And, you know, JT Compher's had he's had a really impressive year. You know, he's on pace for a 56 point year. Kerfoot's another guy on a 50 point pace right now. Those guys have been really good. They've been solid. Really the guy that's kind of been MIA for them that they were really hoping would step up and take a job this year has been Tyson Jost. The numbers haven't been there, but you know, he's 20 years old and the process has been greatly improved. He's a guy that he's dealing with some of that young kid inconsistency, kind of riding the emotional roller coaster, you know, figuring out how to play in this league every day and, you know, how to be an adult at all at the same time. You know, like I said earlier, life is hard, man. And it's watching him go through the ringer right now has been tough, and the team definitely needs more from him, and they need more from those second guys. You know, Tyson Barry gives them a little bit of secondary scoring, but the defense as a whole has not produced offensively to kind of supplement all of all of their offense the way that they were hoping. You know, Eric Johnson has been really iffy. Sam Girard can't score at even strength. Ian Cole had 8 points in the first like 15 games and hasn't scored since. So it's been, you know, it's been a real grind to find points beyond those top three guys who are just magnificent.
AJ, sticking with the defenseman there, you didn't mention Nikita Zadorov. Of course, he's out of the lineup right now, so he's not going to be in the lineup, I don't believe, when the Jets face the Avalanche here next week. But how close is Zadorov to coming back into the lineup, and what's his long-term future? Because I think you'd agree that so far in his early career, you know, there have kind of been mixed reviews as far as Zadorov goes.
You know, Big Z is kind of an enigma, and so the way they've handled his injury, you know, is very, very fitting, because it started out as, oh, he's going to miss a couple of games. And then it was, well, he's day-to-day, and then he was skating. And now the guy's just kind of fallen off the face of the earth. We don't, you know, we don't see him. They have a handful of injured guys right now, and we see those guys skating regularly. You know, Colin Wilson, Mark Barberio, Connor Timmins, those guys are all out there skating pretty regularly. We see them almost every day. Zadorov, we don't see Z ever. We're not really sure what's going on there. Anytime we ask for any kind of updates, Jared Bednar just kind of shrugs and says, I don't know what to tell you. I got nothing. So, you know, that's always incredibly helpful. So we're not really sure. We're not really sure what's going on with him right now, but I would say his long-term future, it's pretty iffy in my opinion. They don't really have anybody else like him on the blue line. And that's probably going to be the most important thing. But his offense, it just hasn't really come around. The defensive inconsistencies are just maddening. There are games where, you know, he's playing physical and he's you know, he can be dominant in games. I'm sure you guys remember that a couple of years ago when he went crazy one night here in Denver. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that can dominate games. And so many times he ends up being a wallflower, and it's got to be very frustrating for the coaching staff and management. He had kind of a contentious contract dispute with the team a couple years ago, and his deal is up again this year, and we'll see how that goes. I'm not sure the team would feel comfortable committing to him long term, and to be honest with you, if the Avs were going to make a disappointing player for disappointing player trade, that's a guy that I think would really stand out as an obvious target.
You know, AJ, in 2009, in the third round, the Avs selected Tyson Barry, and with three assists against the Rangers, he became the all-time franchise leader in scoring by a defenseman. What has he meant to this Avalanche team, not just this year, but throughout his tenure with the squad?
You know, it's kind of wild. That 2009 draft, they draft Matt Duchene, Ryan O'Reilly, and Tyson Barry, and Tyson Barry ends up being the last man standing of all those guys. So he's really been... we'll call him a polarizing player here in Denver. You know, the defense can be kind of an issue at times, but I mean, the offense has been magical at other times. You know, he produces so much, and he's been a rock through some pretty ugly Avalanche days. You know, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. There's a very real question about whether or not the team is going to bring him back, or, you know, if he even is on the team at the beginning of next season because of his contract status and the money he will have earned, because he's one of the better point producing defensemen in the NHL. You know, he's got holes in his game, and he's fun to watch though, and he drives the puck in the right direction more often than not, and he gets after it. He's a great guy in the locker room, very easy to talk to. Teammates love him. They were giving him a hard time last night in the room after he broke the record, and you know, McKinnon was making fun of him, saying he needed 3 points in 3 weeks, and it felt like it took forever for him to actually break the record, and it was a good time. We were all real happy for Tyson. He's a really good guy, and you know, we'll call it a forgettable era of Avalanche hockey. He was one of the few guys that's been able to kind of stand out as one of the positives, and you know, for him to get that record, you know, it's not a really high bar to break, but it was good enough, and you know, we're excited for him, and you know, he's a good dude, so he earned it.
AJ Haefeli is the Avalanche beat writer for BSNDenver.com. AJ, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. You have a good one.
You too, AJ. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. They're going to be a seller at the deadline. We've heard about people wanting the Jets to maybe explore Wayne Simmonds as an option. We'll talk about the Flyers and what they're about to do with that organization and that roster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's like quicksand right now. We're trying to get out, and it feels like it's just getting deeper.
I mean, there's obviously different ways to show passion, playing the right way. A full 60 is a good way to show passion, too, even when it's tough. When you execute day in, day out, that shows your passion about what you do, not the other stuff.
I feel like we're getting into games, you know, we're playing good hockey, and then, you know, we give one up, and then, you know, things turn, start to snowball. So we got to be mentally stronger and, you know, do a better job.
Those are Flyer forwards James Van Riemsdyk and Wayne Simmonds after their loss to the Carolina Hurricanes earlier this week. The struggles in Philadelphia continue. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team. Alongside Dave Mnuchin and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll talk about the Flyers. Earlier in the program, though, we asked you for your submissions. What do you think the Jets need to do ahead of the NHL trade deadline? What position and what players do you think the Jets should target? Number of people chiming in via Twitter. A lot of people want to see the Jets go after Matt Duchene, Jake Muzzin, Eric Staal is certainly popular, Braden Schenn being mentioned, and Marcus Johansson Johansson, who struggled as a member of the New Jersey Devils, struggled with injuries more than anything since he's come over from the Washington Capitals. People saying second line center. We have even a surprise submission. Somebody thinks that the Jets should sign Kevin Bieksa, who certainly would add a veteran presence on the back end for the Jets. Not sure that that's going to happen, but keep your submissions coming at Illegal Curve via Twitter. Who do you think the Jets should acquire ahead of the trade deadline? What positions do you think the Jets need to upgrade ahead of the trade deadline?
Braden Schenn is a very interesting one to me. Really good hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Good Saskatchewan boy. I don't know if the St. Louis Blues want to trade him. I mean, the Blues are obviously not going to be a playoff team this year, and he does have 1 year left on his contract at $5.1 million. So I don't know that, you know,
it's not a pure rental.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you're already paying Brian Little $5 million a year. Mm-hmm. You're paying Scheifele $6 million a year.
Yeah.
You're going to have to pay Laine and Connor on their second deals.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I mean 2 years in a row getting a center from the St. Louis Blues, I don't know if that's going to fly, but
I think the Blues fans might begin to revolt at that point in time, because Braden Schenn has certainly been since coming over from Philadelphia, the team we're about to talk about, to St. Louis, has been a very valuable member of that Blues roster. Now, would Schenn cost you more than what Stastny cost you last year? Probably, because he's not a pure rental, I would think. But Braden
Schenn, he's younger.
Yeah.
He's got 1 year left on his deal, as you mentioned, not a rental. So.
Yeah.
You'd probably have to give up a first-rounder, maybe a roster player, and a prospect.
Probably. I don't think the Jets would be going down that road, but it's certainly a name that has been bandied about, sent to us via Twitter. We want to hear from you, like I said. Who do you think the Jets should look to target ahead of the trade deadline, and or what position do the Jets need to upgrade? At Illegal Curve is how to get a hold of us and submit your response to that question.
The irony is the trade deadline isn't in a week.
7 days from now. 7 weeks from now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd think it'd be a week away the way we're talking about it, but it's no, it's 7 weeks. It's, which, by the way, is just goes to show you that that's hockey in Canada.
Well, and it's all people are going to talk about for the next 7 weeks.
Well, of course, people have been talking about it for pretty much since like season open, but it's just a fact of life. And again, we saw it with Mike McIntyre's article in the Winnipeg Free Press yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the page turns on the new year, the focus switches. You know, Coach Maurice would talk about how hockey ramps up and the effort level changes, the hockey changes now because people are starting to recognize, they're starting to fine-tune the game, and part of that reality is that the trade deadline is fast approaching.
It certainly is. The Philadelphia Flyers are going to be one of those teams that, I don't see how they're not a very active team at the deadline. It's been a terrible year. In Philadelphia, we know that. They fired their general manager. They fired their head coach. This is a team that is just in absolute disarray. They can't score. They can't keep the puck out of their net. They just got another new goaltender who could potentially be, what is it now? Their seventh starting goaltender
on
the year.
What team is Mike McKenna on? Is it Philly?
It's Philly now. He went
Mike
from,
McKenna's been on four teams this year.
But
right?
He went on three. From
He's been
three
on three teams this week.
Yeah.
He went from Ottawa
to Vancouver,
put on waivers by the Canucks. Doesn't clear waivers, goes back to and gets claimed by the Philadelphia Flyers, and given the Flyers
thought he was going to Utica.
Going to Utica to play for the Canucks affiliate. Mm-hmm. Instead, he gets claimed, and I'm sure the Canucks thought he was going to Utica too. They thought they'd be able to sneak him through waivers because they called up Thatcher Demko from Utica to be the backup goaltender in Vancouver after they traded away Anders Nielsen earlier this week. It's just been an absolute circle and a whirlwind of goaltending moves for the Canucks, and it's been a disaster of the year in net for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Good for Mike McKenna. I mean, that's not easy. Moving your family around and all that.
Well, I mean, he'd much rather... Being on the East Coast is closer to where his family is. I don't know if you saw his wife. She had a Twitter thread sort of talking about how difficult it is, you know, for Mike and for the family as he leaves his young family to go potentially play in Vancouver, which is
right.
So far away from where they live.
I'd like to see that guy's passport.
A lot of stamps on it.
Can you imagine his closet with all his jerseys?
He
must have a lot of jerseys.
Yeah. In any event, the Philadelphia Flyers, an absolute disaster right now. Wayne Simmons, we know, is a pending unrestricted free agent at season's end.
Yeah, they're going to trade him.
They're going to trade him. You need to trade him at this point to acquire an asset. And
yep.
Wayne Simmons is a guy who fits in on a lot of teams, even though he's getting onto the wrong side of 30. But he's still a very good player, a very talented player. You trade everybody that's probably not bunkered down there on a long-term deal in Philly, but could you see them going even further and making a bigger splash than just trading their guys who are going to be free agents at season's end, Desi?
Yeah, I do, Drew. And, you know, you mentioned they fired their coach,
yeah,
Dave Hextall. They fired the GM, Ron Hextall.
Mm-hmm.
So really all there is left to do is make trades here, right, and try to figure out what you're going to do long-term, because when you're looking at this roster, I still think there's tons of talent. And we mentioned Wayne Simmonds, pending UFA. He's going to be moved. You know, you've got a few lesser profile UFAs. Michael Raffel is a guy that's a pending UFA. Jordan Wheel is also a pending UFA. I mean, these are bottom six forwards. Mm-hmm. A guy that has actually been mentioned as a possible trade target for the Jets is Radko Gudas. He's a right shot defenseman. He's actually got 1 year left on his contract, but he's a guy that's kind of been bandied about as far as maybe a rental for a team, even though he's got 1 year left. Maybe rental is the wrong word, but a guy that a team looking for a depth defenseman might call Chuck Fletcher and try to get Radko Gudas. But you're talking about the future of this team. I mean, the future of this team is still Claude Giroux, Jacob Voracek, Nolan Patrick, Ivan Provorov, Shane Gostisbehere. I don't think they're looking at moving any of those players, except if they're going to get a number one goaltender. That's the key for me. And Sergei Bobrovsky is a guy whose name's out there.
Used to play for the Flyers.
And, I mean, you know, would you move, you know, a core piece to get a guy like Sergei Bobrovsky? I don't think you'd move that when you could get him in the free agent market.
That's just it. Why would you what are you trading for him at this point in time? Your season's not going anywhere. He's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. I mean, you can back the truck up of money to him on July 1st and get him for for nothing other than the cost of the contract.
Right. And Drew, another name that we should throw out there is a guy that's been kind of linked to Philadelphia as a possible signing in the offseason is Erik Karlsson. I mean, a lot of people think because of his relationship with Henrik Lundqvist and the fact that, you know, New York is, you know, the biggest city and all that Erik Karlsson's going to just by default sign with the New York Rangers. But I think the Philly Flyers are also an option there, especially if they give him what he wants. And the Flyers are going to have a lot of cap room.
Yeah.
That's something that they have going for them. So I don't think they're going to move a Giroux or a Voracek or a Gostisbehere, Provorov, Patrick. I mean, the core guys. But, you know,
let me ask you this,
or Couturier. Just naming these guys, I mean, people forget the Flyers made the playoffs last year,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to make the playoffs this year, but they still have a lot of talent. I mean, the way I look at this
is ails them?
I don't think it's a total rebuild situation. Has Ivan Provorov struggled this year as a second-year defenseman? Is he in his second year or third year? Regardless, he struggled this year. We talked to Anthony Sanfilippo about that. Provorov has not had as good of a year, certainly, as last year. And you look at guys like, you know, Travis Sanheim. I mean, they're still coming into their own.
Nolan Patrick has not been great this year.
Nolan Patrick's
a young player.
Still struggling to find his game. And, you know, he's still young at 20 years old. But I do think that if they bring in a number one goaltender and they make the right moves, I mean, this is a team I think that can turn it around next year. I don't think, you know, this is a situation like Detroit, for example, or L.A., where you're completely rebuilding. When you've got guys like Giroux, Voracek, Van Riemsdyk, Sean Couturier, I mean, these are veteran players. So,
well, you don't sign Van Riemsdyk to a $35 million contract
exactly.
if you think you're going through a full
exactly.
rebuild.
Yeah, this is not a rebuild.
Oh, and this is a young team that, as you just listed off, have a ton of young and up-and-coming players. And, you know, you're relying on Carter Hart, who's only 20 years old, and, you know, he's obviously getting his first taste of NHL action, and, you know, he's been an AHL guy. But the fact of the matter is, if you can stabilize the goaltending in Philadelphia, then you're going a long way to helping solidify that team in the long term. And quickly, I just got to add, Mike McKenna, by my count, 23 different teams.
Wow, 23 different teams. When we come back, Jennifer Botterill is going to join us. You, of course, know Jennifer from her historic performances with Team Canada, as one of the greatest women's hockey players of all time. She's an analyst on New York Islanders broadcast right now. The Islanders playing some really good hockey. Jennifer joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program New York Islanders analyst and four-time Olympian Jennifer Botterill. Jennifer, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Nice to connect.
Nice to connect with you too, Jen. Obviously brought you on to talk a little bit about the Islanders, but first, before we get, you know, deep into the team, how are you enjoying the transition to being, you know, a television personality and enjoying your broadcasting alongside your former linemate at Harvard?
Well, thank you. It's definitely been a fun new opportunity. You know, the MSG Network has been very inviting for me in terms of the opportunity, and to get to have the experience alongside AJ Molesko, who I played with at Harvard and I played against on the national team. She played for Team USA. It's been a real privilege, and I think both of us have enjoyed, you know, the excitement, the energy, and the Islanders have been doing pretty well this season too. So it's definitely been a privilege to be a part of it.
Jen, we have to start off by asking you about the recent play of the Islanders. They're only 1 point out of a wild card spot right now, and Barry Trotz, this is his first season as head coach of the Islanders. What have you noticed as of late with this Islanders team? Obviously, you know, the biggest difference between last year's team is John Tavares now with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but is this just a team that's finding their stride right now and playing with a lot of confidence?
Very much so, and I mean, Trotz is really the ultimate professional, and I feel like he's always a pleasure to speak with, and he really was trying to change the culture in terms of the approach of the players, and you know, speaking to all of them and doing the games recently, they do feel like there has been a shift and that players have really evolved and really bought into the system and become more complete players. And you look at some of the sort of the young stars, Barzal, Beauvillier, who, you know, were always offensively talented, but I think have really learned a lot from Trotz in terms of his philosophy in making sure players play the right way. They take a lot of pride in the D zone. So certainly, and I think Trotz thought that they were playing well earlier in the season. They lost a number of sort of close games, but he said, you know, if people stay the course, that, you know, he did believe in the potential of this team. So, yeah, they've been doing well, and I think very much it's a team that's close-knit. They feel strong as a group, a great team dynamic in the locker room, and they've had some exciting wins lately, too.
You know, Jennifer, is there one player in particular who's kind of jumped out to you in this recent run that the Islanders have been on that has really kind of elevated their game, or has it been, as you just said, kind of a collective effort?
A lot of people that have stepped up. They've had, you know, a few injuries. They've had some young players come up from their AHL team. Devon Toews just scored the overtime winner the other night against the Blackhawks. And, you know, Hosang's come up as well and performed well and taken pride in his role. But, I mean, Barzal's done really well. He's had a lot of goals. Barzal had been playing well throughout the season. He's one of their, I mean, he's just a fun player to watch. He won the Calder Trophy last year, Rookie of the Year, and he's having a really strong sophomore season. And he had been getting a lot of points, a lot of assists, but over the past, you know, few games, he's had a lot of goals. And to see him rewarded for playing two-way hockey and sort of getting those results, he's probably really stood out for me. Leonard, their goaltender, had a great run in December. He came back from an injury, too, and he was really solid. The best goaltender in terms of stats that had, you know, goalies that had played five games or more in December. But if you talk to all the players, I think they were really proud of, like you said, sort of that every person had bought in and contributed in a different way.
Jennifer Botterill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jennifer is an analyst on New York Islanders broadcast. And Jennifer, we've been spending a lot of our show so far today, even though it's 7 weeks away. We've been talking about the trade deadline and potential, you know, players who are pending unrestricted free agents who might end up being trade targets. One of the guys who really jumps out at me is a guy, Brock Nelson. He's a member, of course, of the Islanders. He's on pace for a career high in goals from nearby Warroad, Minnesota here. From your perspective, watching the Islanders probably closer than we do here, what about Brock Nelson's game jumps out to you the most?
You know, he's been steady, and I think, you know, that's the big thing, too. One of the things that the coach, Barry Trotz, has, you know, been asking of his players is consistency. And I think that was a little bit of something that was lacking for the Islanders early in the season, but they've sort of transitioned into more consistent play. But throughout the process, I mean, Nelson has been one of those guys that's pretty steady and pretty consistent in terms of his performance. And, you know, someone with a little more experience on the team has been great for some of the young talent. And, I mean, he's been one of their top six forwards. You know, playing well and just solid in terms of, you know, if he needed a shot block, he was there, but contributing offensively. And just sort of, I think the big thing for me watching him play was sort of steady and consistent.
Jennifer, I wanted to switch topics a little bit and ask you about a woman who you used to play with, Jaina Hefford. She was recently inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame a couple of months ago. You won gold medals with her at the Olympics with Team Canada, also obviously the silver, but we won't talk about that too much. We'll focus on the gold. But did you have a chance to talk to Jaina before she was inducted into the Hall of Fame? And also wanted to ask you about Haley Wickenheiser. Many people believe that Haley Wickenheiser will be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but some people also believe you're going to be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame with the great international career and the career you had with Harvard University. I still believe that you are the all-time leading scorer in NCAA hockey. But did you talk to Jaina and make your argument for why Haley Wickenheiser should be in the Hall of Fame next year?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, thank you for your very nice comments. And certainly looking back at, you know, my opportunity and my career, I mean, Jaina Hefford and Haley Wickenheiser were two, you know, absolute superstars that I had the opportunity and the privilege to play with. And, you know, Jaina and I also play on the same line for a number of years and a few Olympic cycles together. And, I mean, I played that, you know, sort of through four different Olympics with both those players, and then each of them continued on to play a fifth. And, you know, I was sort of ready to retire after four, but both of them, you know, I think it's just a demonstration of their drive and motivation and certainly the impact they had on women's hockey that they both competed at five Olympic Games, you know, winning four gold medals each and a silver. I mean, Jaina, yes, I talked to her, and she's, you know, she's just so grounded, and she's such an accomplished athlete, but certainly professional as well. And, you know, almost as in her career, it was great to see her, you know, get this recognition. And she was always such a humble athlete that she sort of went about her business quietly in terms of any extra attention and was just a constant performer, a naturally gifted goal scorer. And she was always fun to play with. She had such speed. And, you know, I think when you need a big goal, whether it was an international event or world championship final, gold medal final at the Olympics, I feel like Jaina Hefford was always there. And you look at Haley Wickenheiser, yeah, I mean, she was continued to, I think, break boundaries, right, in terms of women's hockey, in terms of her play. She's probably the hardest working athlete I had the chance to play with. And, again, just so gifted in terms of her vision of the game, in terms of her intensity. And, you know, she was just always sort of led by example in terms of her drive, in terms of her love of the game. And certainly lots of exciting awards and honors for WIC ahead. There's no doubt about that.
You know, Jennifer, you were, I think it says you were born in Ottawa, but we know you grew up in Winnipeg. You went to SJR, so we always like to promote Winnipeggers. And,
yes.
And one thing, you know, you have to factor in is that you're a role model for so many kids here in Winnipeg and across Canada with what you're doing now in hockey. How do you handle that? I mean, it's obviously different than when you were playing the game, but it's still, you know, a respect now that you get that people look to you as a kind of a breaker of barriers, if you will.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And yeah, I mean, I'm always a proud Winnipeg girl, and I certainly remember, you know, I lived in Winnipeg from when I was a year old. We moved to Winnipeg, and that's my hometown. And I mean, I remember being that kid that walked to the Wildwood Community Club at the end of the street and, you know, started shooting pucks. And, you know, I think that, you know, certainly playing on the Olympic team for Team Canada, playing at Harvard, I think all of us that had the chance to play women's hockey always take pride in giving back, you know, and hopefully growing the game and, you know, being a positive role model. That's something we all take a lot of pride in. And certainly with this new role in terms of being an analyst, in terms of standing between the benches, you know, during the games, it's intense and you have to be focused. And it's been an opportunity to provide some insight. And, you know, I also look to others who have sort of, you know, broken new ground in broadcasting. I mean, Cassie Campbell-Pascal's done an outstanding job as well. And there's, you know, a lot of female broadcasters that have provided, I suppose, this opportunity for AJ and I in terms of this analyst role. So, you know, if I look at the growth of women's hockey, I say, you know, not every girl has to play hockey now in Canada, but I love that it's a choice. And, you know, hopefully it's the same for broadcasting roles, whatever it might be, if it's play-by-play or color or analyst role, whatever it might be, that not everyone has to, but hopefully it's an option for everyone.
Jennifer Botterill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jennifer's an analyst on New York Islanders broadcast. Jennifer, you mentioned sort of the next development in women's hockey. Right now there's two professional women's hockey leagues, the Canadian Women's Hockey League and then the NWHL based in the United States. Is it time for those two leagues to merge together to create one professional women's hockey league in North America and maybe take the next step in prominence for women's hockey?
Definitely, yes, that's my answer. I mean, I hope it happens sooner than later. I do appreciate that both leagues have different business partners and that they need to, you know, maintain relationships with, but I know there are ongoing discussions, and I certainly would like to see that happen, you know, in terms of, you know, the global growth of the game, creating one league where your elite players are competing, I think is a huge step. I do like that there are continued conversations with the NHL, and there was just an announcement today that they've partnered with the NHLPA. So there are strides that are moving in the right direction, but certainly I'd love to see those two leagues come together, no question.
That's right. The on the jerseys now, we got the email earlier today as well, the NHLPA logo will appear on all the jerseys of the CWHL players for the remainder of this season.
Yes.
That's great. Jennifer, we have to ask you about your brother. This is the second year that Jason has been the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, and we wanted to ask you, how nice has it been to see the Sabres having success? They're in a wild card spot right now. They obviously had those 10 wins in a row earlier in the season, and I might add, that move that your brother made acquiring Jeff Skinner, that's looking pretty good right now.
It is, and you know, I'm happy for Jason. I think he's very level-headed, you know, and speaking to him, too, during their big run in November. And he said, you know, I know it's not going to last forever, this win streak, but we're enjoying it right now. And, you know, Jason's worked very hard in his career for, you know, the 10 years he spent in Pittsburgh, and now this year and a half he's been in Buffalo. And he's a hard worker, you know, and I think he's been very thorough in terms of his knowledge of the game, in terms of, you know, transactions that he made over the off season, and so I'm very happy for him to see the team doing well. And you know, I know my brother too. He just says, you know, he's happy for the Buffalo fans too. You know, that they love their hockey, they love the Sabres, and it's great to see them again in a solid position right now. So yeah, I'm very very proud, and very happy for Jason.
You know, the Islanders and the Sabres battling it out for maybe the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference could create a little bit of awkwardness around the dinner table, but I guess that's a separate issue altogether. Last question for you, Jennifer. You know, going back to the Islanders, they've sort of been a little nomadic this year, playing some of their games in Brooklyn, playing some of their games at the Coliseum on Long Island. Do you think the players have sort of maybe used that nomadic existence as a bit of a rallying cry? You know, you lose John Tavares, maybe it's, instead of it being, oh, woe is me, the players say, well, we're going to show them that we are more than just a one-player team and exceed expectations for this 2018-19 NHL season.
Very much so. I think there is a real sense of determination. You know, they, you know, I covered the game, there was, the Islanders played in Toronto just before the new year, and so there was a lot of, you know, discussion about the Tavares departure, but you know, they had nice, you know, great things to say about him, that they learned a lot from him, and Tavares was very proud of his impact on the Islanders organization. But I do think there was a determination and a resolution within that Islanders locker room to have a great year and to learn to perform, you know, without him. And yeah, even with this sort of back and forth in terms of their home rinks, playing at the Barclays Center, coming back to the Coliseum, and I've done a few games already at the Coliseum, and I mean, it's a pretty special environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fans love that place. The players enjoy playing there as well. So it's been, I think, a pretty energetic environment, and the players have responded well to that. So I think it's sort of a combination of appreciation by the fans and some determination by the players.
Olympic champion, world champion, and now an analyst on New York Islanders broadcast, Jennifer Botterill, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us. All the best to you the rest of this day, and thanks again. We'll have you on again real soon.
Okay, thanks. Great to chat with you. Thank
Likewise.
You.
Take care. When we come back, we're going to be talking about that Eastern Conference. It's pretty top-heavy. Will any of the teams that are currently outside of the playoffs, not including the Islanders, who are only a point out, will any of the teams that are 7, 8, 9 points out be able to make a run and make it competitive in the NHL's Eastern Conference? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Ottawa currently mired in a season-high 5-game losing streak. Now, on Tuesday, the Senators were back on the ice. The only member of the coaching staff was associate coach Mark Crawford. It was a bit of a different practice for the Sens, as it was run basically by the players. And at one point, Mark Stone gathered the team at center ice to have a team meeting and to discuss how their recent play is unacceptable and things need to change. Also, January 1st marks the start, if you will, for the contract negotiations for Mark Stone. Now, he's hoping...
That's TSN's Brent Wallace talking about the Ottawa Senators. The Ottawa Senators aren't going to be a playoff team. That's fairly clear at this point in the season. They are currently 14 points out of a playoff spot. But yesterday, in preparing for the show, I was looking at the Eastern Conference, and the Buffalo Sabres are in the first wildcard spot with 50 points, and the Montreal Canadiens are in the second wildcard spot with 49 points. And right behind the Sabres and the Canadiens are the New York Islanders. They have 48 points, and they have two games in hand on both the Sabres and the Habs. But after the Islanders, it is 8 points until the next best team in the Eastern Conference. The Carolina Hurricanes are 8 points behind the Habs with 41 points, and that's even after winning their third game in a row last night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So you have the top real nine in the Eastern Conference, and then you have everybody else. And my question for you, gentlemen, is can any of those anybody else teams, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Rangers, the Devils, even the Red Wings you can throw in for the argument's sake, can any of those teams make it or make a run in the Eastern Conference? Or is this a case at the halfway point of the season, and the halfway point of the season is tonight, where the Eastern Conference is going to be decided by one of the top nine teams and nobody else is going to be potentially a playoff team?
Yeah, it looks right now like, you know, the Islanders have the best shot. Drew, you just mentioned it. I mean, they're 1 point back, right? But then all the other teams are 8 or more points back. I mean, for me, the Florida Panthers are the team that, if there's going to be any one of these teams, you mentioned Carolina, Detroit, I mean, Ottawa is too far back, as you mentioned, but it's got to be the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers, guys, lost their last game to the Buffalo Sabres, who we were just talking to Jennifer Botterill about. They've got a huge game at home tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. But after that, the Florida Panthers go on the road for 5 straight road games. And then they have a road game after one home game. So the 6 of 7 games are on the road after tonight's game at home, right? And let me read you the teams that they're playing. So Columbus is a good team. They're playing them tonight. Then you've got Pittsburgh, Edmonton, Calgary. So Edmonton is not in a playoff spot, but they're fighting for their lives. Calgary is leading the Pacific Division. Then you've got Vancouver.
Leading the Western Conference.
You've got Vancouver, so they're not a very good team, probably doing better than we thought they were doing. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Montreal, and then the one game they have at home coming up after that is Toronto, and then you've got Nashville. So of those upcoming 7 games, you've got 5 games against playoff teams. And then the other two teams are not that far out of a playoff spot when you're talking about Edmonton and Vancouver. So the Panthers have a really tough schedule coming up, and then they've got San Jose at home before the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. So if you actually want to look at their next 8 games,
they have 2 non-playoff teams.
Six of eight are against playoff teams. So the Florida Panthers have a tough schedule coming up. They could really use Vincent Trocheck. Vincent Trocheck's been out of the lineup since the end of November, closer to mid-November, actually with that ankle injury. He's actually skating now.
Mm-hmm.
So Trocheck isn't going to be back this week, but I think the hope is that he's going to be back, you know, within the next 2 or 3 weeks. But they've really missed him, and you know, goaltending has been an issue. But for Florida, it's really been secondary scoring. I mean, Alex Barkov's having a great year. Jonathan Huberdeau's been good. Frank Vetrano's actually really stepped up his game. He's got 11 goals now, but they haven't been getting a lot of offense from their defensemen. I mean, Aaron Ekblad, Mike Matheson, you know, great defensemen. Keith Yandel, one of the best power play defensemen in the entire league. But that's been the issue, Dave. After Barkov, Huberdeau, Mike Hoffman, we should mention too, Evgeny Dadonov, I mean, they just don't have enough secondary scoring. They're not scoring enough goals. But for me, that's probably the one team, aside from the Islanders, that I think can do it. You remember, they went on that crazy second-half run last year.
Yes.
And they ended up finishing 1 point out of the playoffs. So for me, the Panthers are that one team that I would keep an eye on. But when you're down 8 points in January, I mean, they've got to go on a nice winning streak, right? You've got to win 5, 6, 7 games in a row here.
And you need to do it in January, because as we saw last year with the Panthers, is they did it sort of in March, and they just ran out of gas. If you do it in January, and, I mean, you have to – it's not like you – I mean, the Florida Panthers should not be behind the New York Rangers in the standings.
I would argue that the Panthers are a more talented team than the Islanders as well.
Definitely. I think I would agree with that, especially without Tavares. The Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes are two of this season's most disappointing teams, especially in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
It's time, if they want to go on that run, now is the time to do it. And you just outlined how difficult their schedule will be. But if you are after the All-Star break and you're still 8 points out, or you're 10 points out, or...
Well, you're done.
You're done. You just can't make up the ground.
Right. No. I'd probably argue, guys, that out of these next 8 games before the All-Star break, they probably have to win at least 6.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would agree with you.
There's no question. I mean, you can't, you know, the Hurricanes are on a bit of a run. They've won three in a row. To me, the only team that's even worth talking about right now is the New York Islanders. I think, you know, 1 point back, their goal differential is plus 13. Mm-hmm. And again, goal differential isn't always an indicator that you're going to make a playoff. So, you know, some teams do it with a negative goal differential. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's generally not a very good sign when you're allowing more goals than you're scoring.
Well, the only team currently in a playoff spot in the entire NHL with a negative goal differential,
someone in the West,
is the Anaheim Ducks. Yeah. And that's only because John Gibson has been beyond incredible.
Right. So to me, you know, I look at the New York Islanders plus 13, which is better than the Sabres, who are at plus 1, and the Canadians, who are at plus 2. And Carey Price, I think there was a question about him. He came out of practice yesterday. So I don't know if maybe he's fine. I don't know. But I thought I saw something about him leaving practice early yesterday. So that would be a big loss for Montreal if that was the case. But the fact of the matter is, to me, the Islanders are the team that are probably going to be on the positive side of the equation. And one of those other teams maybe on the outside looking in. But aside from that, I mean, I don't think Carolina, New York, or Florida are even going to be close.
I would agree. I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, I was looking back at some of the old, you know, topics that we discussed last year. And again, the same conversations were, you know, are the Eastern Conference sort of teams, are the playoff teams almost set at this point in the season? It's a second straight year where there really aren't competitive races to make the playoffs. I mean, if you're any of the, you know, I mean, maybe if you're the Bruins, you're still a little bit nervous, or if you're the Blue Jackets. I mean, the Blue Jackets are actually only a point ahead of the Islanders. But really, in the East right now, you have nine teams battling for eight spots. And it's the gap between the Islanders and the next best team, the Hurricanes and the Rangers, that's so surprising to me. That's so emblematic of just how poor the Eastern Conference has been this season.
Right. And I hate to go back to Vincent Trocheck, and you hate to say that it's just one injury, but I mean, that's equivalent of, you know, the Jets losing Brian Little for 2.5 or 3 months. I think Vincent Trocheck at this point in his career is a better player than Brian Little, but Trocheck to me is one of those players that he had 75 points last year.
Yeah.
I mean, Trocheck
is a guy, maybe lineup, it's significant.
Well, and you know, 31 goals, 44 assists. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, it was his breakout year, and he actually, you know, has been a pretty good player for about 5 years now with the Panthers, but he's a guy, maybe because it's Miami Sunrise, that you don't hear about him a lot, but, you know, missing him in the lineup has created, you know, a big void, and they've got a guy like Jared McCann, who's still, you know, he is young. He's still in his early 20s. I mean, you know, he's still, you know, trying to find his game at the NHL level, but yeah, that was a really, you know, unfortunate injury for the Panthers. And as I mentioned, I mean, it looks like Trocheck is going to come back here, you know, within the next month, but I mean, they need the wins now.
Big congratulations goes out to Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice. He has been announced as the Central Division coach for the upcoming NHL All-Star Game. So he joins, of course, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler as Winnipeg Jets representatives at the game in San Jose. Patrick Laine is still a candidate as part of that, what are they calling
it?
Last man in vote. Bill Peters will head the Pacific Division. He's obviously turned around the Calgary Flames. He's done a great job with the Flames, despite what Alan Walsh and Michael Frolik might have you believe. Another negative tweet from those two guys earlier this week.
Well, not two. Walsh.
Right, fine.
Frolik didn't tweet.
You're
obviously
right.
he knew what Walsh was going to do.
Like,
we don't know that.
He's endorsing the tweet by his agent, I think it's safe to say. John Cooper of the Tampa Bay Lightning coaches the Atlantic Division, and Todd Reirden, first-year head coach with the Capitals, will coach the Metropolitan Division. So congratulations to those four gentlemen on being named as the coaches for the NHL All-Star Game.
Did Alan Walsh block you?
He blocked me 1 second after all I said. So Alan Walsh tweeted about how...
This is amazing, by the way.
Alan Walsh tweeted about how Frolik is not getting enough ice time and how, you know, being negative towards the Flames organization. All I said in response, I just quote tweeted it, and I said, this is a bad look for Michael Frolik. I mean, having it out in public like this, just demand your trade behind the scenes and go about it, you know,
that's
quietly.
It's a blockable offense.
Really?
It's offensive, Drew.
I didn't curse. I didn't use... I mean, I think as a hockey commentator, which is what we do, we analyze hockey on this program, it's fairly fair comment. Alan Walsh, you know how thin-skinned he is, said, obviously, no.
I would love to know how many people he's got blocked.
Well, everybody that responded to my tweet initially said, we don't know what he said because he has us blocked. And Ezzie's been blocked by Alan Walsh for years now, apparently.
Oh, I don't
Dave,
follow
you
him.
Might...
I don't follow him.
I don't follow him either.
I don't follow him. I don't tweet about him because I don't really care, but, like...
The only part of it is I think it got retweeted into my timeline by somebody else, and I just said, it's a bad look for Michael Frolik to continue to permit his agent to do this. Just do go about your business behind the scenes, and apparently that, you know, was very offensive to Alan Walsh personally.
As a quick aside, the Calgary Flames are like the Rodney Dangerfield of the NHL.
They don't get no respect.
They can't get no respect, but let me tell you, Calgary Flames.
Top the Western Conference.
Red hot.
Yeah. Damn good hockey team right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chris Peters of ESPN.com. The World Junior Hockey Championships wrap up later today with both the bronze and the gold medal game. We'll talk to Chris about those contests and about the tournament as a whole. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN, we're pleased to be joined by our good friend Chris Peters to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. The tournament comes to an end later on tonight with the gold medal game between Canada and, pardon me, not Canada, the United States, my apologies, and Finland.
Pretty sure Canada lost to Finland.
Yeah, they did. I misspoke there, Chris. My apologies for that. Obviously, Chris, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
You know, Chris, before we get into sort of individual players, maybe individual matchups of this tournament, as we approach the bronze medal game this afternoon and the gold medal game tonight, on an overall basis, how would you evaluate this tournament as compared to past year's tournaments?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've been talking about that a lot where, you know, a lot of teams haven't really stood out, haven't really taken charge. There hasn't been one team where you can say, wow, that's a dominant team. And the U.S. has had some really good games, but they, you know, they had that dramatic comeback against Sweden, but at the early goings of that game, they looked like they didn't even belong on the ice with Sweden. So, you know, you just kind of see those games and you're like, wow, this is a really weird World Juniors. And I was talking to my friend Corey Priman about who are we going to pick to be the MVP of this tournament? Who are we going to pick to be part of the All-Star team? You know, not a lot of guys dominating in terms of points, not a lot of guys that have had great levels of consistency. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's the World Juniors, so it's still exciting. It's still fun. The games are still good. But I would say on an overall quality kind of situation, I think this is a little bit below average. And that's kind of surprising considering the talent that's playing here today.
Chris, I think you would agree that tonight's final is going to be a goaltending battle. And both Juho Pekka Luukkonen and Caden Primo have been excellent thus far for their respective teams. Caden Primo, as you know, a late draft pick of the Montreal Canadiens. His numbers have been spectacular. We should also throw in Mikey DiPietro, who was excellent for Team Canada. But how surprised have you been with the way Caden Primo has played? Because, as I mentioned, he's not really a household name. Also should mention that is Keith Primo's son.
Yeah, you know, I'm not that surprised because I watched him a lot last season at Northeastern, and I saw a goalie just grow into his game. And he had a over 930 save percentage last year with Northeastern, was a key factor in that resurgence of that program. They won the Bean Pot. They had great success in Hockey East and really had one of the best seasons in program history. And I think that Caden Primo in particular has been has just been a guy that you always know what you're going to get out of him. He doesn't really have the bad game. He's just very in control, very reserved. I think he's very calm and confident in the net. And that experience that he had last year, I think, is really a big part of why he's succeeding at the World Juniors, because he's played on big stages before. And he's played at the World Junior A Challenge. And he played at the Ivan Hlinka. And he was even part of a U18 World Championship, though he didn't play very much for that team. And so he's had those opportunities to have that experience, and that's the big difference between him and Kyle Kizer, who's now become the backup. And I think coming into this tournament, Kyle Kizer is the best goalie in the OHL to start the season. I think that there was a belief that he would be the number one guy, and Caden Primo has given everybody reason to believe that he deserves the number one. He had just an absolutely tremendous game against Russia, And again, I'm not surprised to see it because this has kind of been the trend for him, and what a great accomplishment for a seventh-round draft pick.
You know, Chris, we're a Winnipeg-based show, so folks around here are going to want to know about how the Jets draft picks are doing in the tournament. So we'll start off with Dylan Sandberg. How's he look to you?
Yeah, you know, I think Sandberg's, he's been pretty good. He's had an up-and-down tournament. There have been a few games where I thought he looked out of character, was getting beat wide, was, you know, maybe not defending as confidently as I have seen him do it in the past. And there were some instances even against Russia where I thought he looked a little bit shakier. He was turning the puck over. It was not playing as well under pressure. However, in general, I mean, he's been pretty darn good. I think that, you know, he's more of a defense-first guy. He does have enough skill to produce. I think that that's going to come with time. But that's not something that, you know, at this stage, or especially at the World Juniors, is going to be a huge part of his game. He's played a lot with Mikey Anderson, his partner at Minnesota Duluth, so that helps, having that chemistry. I think Anderson's probably been Team USA's best defenseman in this tournament so far, but, you know, Sandberg played the second most minutes of any defenseman yesterday, only to Anderson against Russia, and I think he has, you know, has the trust of the coaching staff. It certainly helps that his regular coach, Scott Sandlin, is on the bench for USA. But they needed more out of him yesterday, and I think that they got it. I think that, you know, he was playing in key moments of that game, and for the most part was very good.
Now, Chris, just sticking with Dylan Sandberg, you know, this is his second year with University of Minnesota Duluth. Do we know yet if he's planning on playing another year at University of Minnesota Duluth, or is there a chance that he turns pro after his college season is over?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not real sure. I think I would prefer that he stay another year if I'm the Jets. I think that there's still a lot to be learned. He took a gigantic leap last year from high school to college, and I thought that he managed that incredibly well. But what I've seen here at the World Juniors, I've seen some of those little things that give me a little cause for concern, where, you know, when the game's a little faster, he's having a little bit more trouble at the puck, and when the game's a little bit harder, you know, he's turning the puck over a little bit more. So that's something I didn't see as much last year, especially late in the college season. I watched him quite a bit with Minnesota Duluth, and I was at the Frozen Four, and you know, I was just so impressed with his poise. And you know, I think he still needs to take another step, and I think his offensive game needs to develop more before he can make that leap to, you know, playing in the AHL, playing in the NHL. I think those are the two key factors: is just being more comfortable with the pace of the game, and expanding on his offensive skill set, because it's there. He just hasn't tapped into it fully yet.
Chris Peters is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris covers the world of hockey for ESPN.com. Chris, in tonight's gold medal game, Jack Hughes is going to get all the headlines, but there's another expected top five pick in the lineup. That's Finnish winger Kaapo Kakko. He's expected to go in the top five. Hughes missed a number of games in the tournament with an injury. Kakko has played for the Finns. How have you liked his tournament?
I've really liked his tournament. I think that he has been one of Finland's best and most consistent forwards. He is a very mature player. He's got good size. He can engage physically. He is incredibly smart. I think that we saw Eli Tolvanen really struggled at the beginning of this tournament. And as soon as he gets put with Kaapo Kakko, he just took off. And he hasn't scored any goals, but him playing with Kakko has really opened up his game. He's playing with more energy. He's a bigger threat offensively. He's a guy that can absolutely play, you know, and produce. And I think that we're seeing Kakko get put with the top players in Finland, and he's making them better. To me right now, he's the number two prospect right behind Jack Hughes. But I think that his World Junior Championship is certainly going to, you know, increase that little debate. Is Jack Hughes really the presumptive number one? I think that for most people he still is, but Kaapo Kakko definitely giving people a reason to kind of pay more attention to him and see what he's doing. He's having a great year in Liga, and he's been really good here.
Well, Chris, a couple more Jets prospects that we got to ask you about. Number one is David Gustafson, 2018 second-round pick of the Jets, and 2017 fourth-round pick Santeri Virtanen. What did you see from those two players?
Yeah, well, I think Gustafson first, he's really... He's more of a, you know, a grinded out defensive kind of style center, even though he had such great points last year. Sweden used him more as a defensive kind of shutdown guy. I thought that he plays that role well. He's got real, you know, the coaching staff really trusted him. They like the grit in his game, the energy that he plays with. Obviously a disappointing finish for Sweden, but, you know, the thing that makes Gustafsson so effective, not just as a defensive forward, but just in general, is that he can play with pace. And I think that was evident throughout here, was his ability to just kind of keep up with the pace. And, you know, you put him out there against top lines, and they're going to have a real hard time against him. So I thought that was really good. And then Virtanen has kind of been, I'd say he's more of a depth forward for Finland, but they've, I think, particularly against Canada, their depth lines really showed up in the forecheck. And that's, you know, he can get up and down the ice pretty well. He gets behind the D decently enough, really good on the forecheck. And I think that was one of the things that gave Canada problems, because Canada had one of the fastest teams in this tournament, but the more the pressure their defense was under, the harder it was to get their transition going. And a big part of that was because of the forechecking, like guys like Virtanen, like Moilanen, that aren't the star players on the team. But, you know, I think that he's more of a, you know, kind of a future depth player, if he tops out at his, you know, whatever his upside might be. But definitely has played a factor and played a role in getting Finland to the gold medal game. And, I think overall I'd like the game here.
Chris, you're in Vancouver and Victoria covering the tournament, and we know how big the tournament is here in Canada, and, you know, it might be the case that less people are going to watch the final because Canada is not involved in it, but, you know, you cover hockey in the U.S. You used to work for USA Hockey and have the United States of Hockey site, and how has this tournament been received in the U.S.? Is there a big buzz for this gold medal final, because the U.S., you know, didn't win it in the last couple of tournaments? They last won it, they won it 2 years ago. But is there a big buzz in the U.S. right now for this gold medal game?
I think there's probably, you know, there's hockey buzz for it. You know, there's buzz within the hockey community. I think that if it was against Canada, there would be more buzz, because I think that just kind of generally, you know, gets everybody's lets the hair on the back of their neck stand up a little bit more. But I think that really the tournament as a whole, in terms of interest, has grown exponentially since I first started, you know, being involved with the World Juniors, either with USA Hockey or as I've covered it. So, you know, each year it seems to get a little bit more interest. You know, the fact that NHL Network covers it in the U.S., they broadcast every U.S. game, that's been a big factor in increasing the popularity of the tournament. I think that, you know, 2 years ago, I never saw anything like the buzz for the gold medal game against Canada, and it only grew as the game went on, because all of a sudden it became the social media buzz of, are you seeing this? Are you seeing this? This is crazy. And people tuned in, and I think that was a big moment for the World Juniors in the United States. You know, last year, I thought the tournament just overall just kind of lacked buzz, and it was kind of stalled out, and then the U.S. ended up playing for the bronze. But I think this year we'll have to wait and see when it gets closer to game time. I think the fact that the game is actually at, you know, basically in prime time tonight will help a lot, because certainly yesterday's game was in the afternoon, and it was kind of hard to gauge what was going on. But overall, the World Juniors means far more to American hockey fans now than it did, you know, 10 years ago. And I think that's a good thing for the tournament, and it's a good thing for hockey in general, because more hockey that people are watching, the better it is for the sport.
Chris, last question for you, and I apologize for the randomness of it, but admittedly it is random. Last night, Boston College lost to Arizona State, which made it 24 straight games that Boston College has lost in non-conference action, going back to November of 2016. How do you explain that anomaly for a Boston College team that appears to not be that bad? Otherwise, just it's terrible in non-conference hockey.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, really, that's the only way to put it. It's bizarre. I think that Boston College has not gotten the level of recruit that they're used to getting. Notwithstanding, you know, they have Oliver Wahlstrom, who's here, and they'll have Spencer Knight next year, who's, you know, probably one of the few goalies that'll go in the first round this year, based on how he's played. And it's been really difficult for them to find those high-end offensive players. Now, the fact that they just can't seem to win in the non-conference games is absolutely crazy to me. But I think that right now this is a team that lacks center depth. They have a good goaltender in Joel Wall, but no help around him. They don't have the level of defense that they've used to have. It's been really shocking to kind of see them fall in these games. I have no idea why against non-conference opponents, they can't get it together. But I think that if they don't soon, you know, I wonder what, you know, the way the program is trending. I mean, Jerry York's been there forever. I think that he'll go on his own terms no matter what. And I would never suggest that a coach with as many wins as he has and as many national championships he has needs to go. But they need to start making some changes in terms of how they're approaching their recruiting and just getting their guys up and going here, because I think that the lack of non-conference wins is a symptom of a greater problem based on kind of where Boston College is trending. But very shocking. I wish I had easy answers for it, but I think it's one of the most bizarre things going in college hockey right now.
And Chris Peters covers hockey for ESPN.com. Chris, enjoy tonight's gold medal contest. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
When we come back, we talk about sleep. It won't be Ezzy snoring as much as I'd like it to be, because he's got a CPAP machine now. But
I've got that clip if you guys want to hear it.
I think we should play it just for the hell of it. It's always entertaining to listen to what Ezzy used to sound like. But we're going to talk about sleep, and should practices be moved to the afternoon to allow players more recovery time and more sleep? Interesting article. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's been playing to absolute great crowds and great reviews. DJ Demers is at Rumors, and then next week, one of our favorites, Kelly Taylor from the province to the west of us, Saskatchewan, will be in town. And of course, coming up in February, Jay Moore is going to be at Rumors. Tickets available for all of these great upcoming shows at Rumors Comedy Club. .com. Interesting article. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
Just want to give a quick shout out to my niece Riley, who's listening to us right now on the air.
Oh, do you know when her birthday is? Because you don't know when your mom's birthday
is. I know when Riley's birthday is. It's in June.
Come on. There you go. At least you got one of those correct.
Shout out to Riley.
Yeah. Shout out to Riley indeed. Anyways, talking about sleep. That's what I want to talk about for the final segment. An interesting article.
Sleep is the cousin of tired.
What does that mean?
And by the way, shouldn't we have Restless Rick Ralph on for this segment?
Restless Rick Ralph?
This pillow.
The commercial.
No, I get that, but like, I forgot.
Because of the My Pillows.
Why do I even bother? Anyways, there's an article in The Athletic earlier this week by Fluto Shinzawa, who covers the Boston Bruins, has covered the Bruins for years, basically saying that practice for NHL teams is at the wrong time. Saying that when players, you know, most practices are typically 10 a.m., 11 a.m., somewhere around there. The Jets this afternoon will practice a little bit later, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Basically, the article talks to sleep researchers and sleep experts and says, when you have practice at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m., players, you know, assuming they wake up at 8:30 to get ready for practice, are still in the midst of recovery when they wake up at that point in time. Sleep is key, as we know, to recovery from injury, to recovery from illness. And by scheduling practice at the times that they schedule it, you're interrupting players in their recovery. The question posed by Fluto Shinzawa, and the question, you know, he talks about is, should practices be held later in the afternoons, later in the evenings, to more resemble when game times are being held? Is that something that the NHL should look to adopt to allow players more recovery time in between games?
Well, you mentioned, Drew, the science backs it up.
And yes.
I don't think that NHL teams are going to start having practices at night, but maybe they start having them a little bit later in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and it makes a lot of sense for obvious reasons, right? Especially when the travel's involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're flying back late at night, and then you're scheduled to practice the next day, whether it's 10:30 or 1, that's not a lot of recovery time. So if you move a practice to, say, 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, like I mentioned, you know, it gives the body a little bit more time to recuperate. But, you know, it makes a lot of sense because hockey seems to be changing so rapidly, right? And it changes almost every... Not every 5 or 10 years. It seems to change every year with all of the
sports science.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, every team has psychologists. Every team has, you know, nutritionists. And you know, sleep experts are no different. I mean, I don't have to tell you this, Drew. You've got two kids. I've got a kid. I mean, sleep is really important. If you don't get a good night's sleep,
Dave has a website.
Yeah, the website actually keeps me up like a kid. That's a fair point. I pay more attention to the website than you guys do to your kid.
No, and
that makes a lot of sense.
I'm not saying that sleep isn't important for you, Dave. I mean, it's important for all of us. It's important for university students. It's important for young kids. I mean, you have to get, you know, whether it's 7 or 8 hours sleep. I mean, your body needs it. I mean, the human body needs a certain amount of sleep to function properly, mm-hmm. you know, at school or in the workplace or you know, to be a good parent or whatever it is. So, you know, he mentions, Fluto Shuzawa, that is, you mentioned, he's the writer, covers the Bruins. You know, he mentions that, you know, for there to be progress, it's the last line of the article, there requires a pioneer. But what he's saying is that, you know, teams at other levels of hockey have to start adopting this, whether it's at the American Hockey League level or the Junior Hockey League level, because NHL teams, Drew, it's a copycat league. We know that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think teams are going to start doing this.
Some teams have started getting rid of the morning skate.
Sure.
And then it's become more popular, as you mentioned.
But I don't see NHL teams moving their practices to nighttime.
Well, I don't think that,
because they're creatures of habit.
I don't think that they're going to start practicing at 7 o'clock. To your point, but you know, I don't see a reason if it allows recovery via sleep. Why practices? I mean, most practices aren't hours in length. They're, you know, an hour, maybe 2 hours if you throw in some video time in a meeting or whatever. Why a practice can't be held at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to allow players as much recovery time in the morning and in the early afternoon as possible, Dave.
And I just sort of, Dave, you know, before you jump in here, I thought there was a funny quote by Zdeno Chara towards the end of the article when they asked him like what he thought about, you know, nighttime practices, and he mentioned traffic. Right? And that's something to consider when you're living in a big city, right?
Yeah.
He's saying like, I want to leave practice at 5 or 6 and then I'm in rush hour traffic.
Yeah, so that's a good point by Big Z. Appropriate that he gets interviewed considering he's Big Z.
Ah, there you go. Nicely done there. That was well worked there, Dave. I mean, here's the quote from the article. The reason is to extend post-game sleep for the players. Data has proven that proper sleep is critical for recovery. Depending on the player, the process of repair sometimes does not begin until several hours into his sleep. It makes little sense, then, to disrupt recovery during a critical stage. A player coming off proper rest is in better shape, so to speak, than one who is fatigued. The likelihood of injury decreases. The chances of better performance increases. A team that has more good, healthy players is more likely to win than one that does not.
In honor of this topic, I think I'm going to go have a nap.
You're going to have a nap regardless of whether or not this was the segment or not. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Chris Peters from ESPN.com, New York Islanders analyst Jennifer Botterill, AJ Hafley covers the Avalanche, Mike Heike covers the Dallas Stars, and Trevor Kidd, of course, on the Winnipeg Jets. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, IllegalCurve.com. It's on TSN1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thanks to producer Sean Asor behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for both wild card football and the gold medal game at the World Junior Hockey Championships on your home of sports in Winnipeg, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.